This message was recorded live at the Ark Church in Conroe, Texas.
Here's what I believe. I believe that we have a generation beneath us that God wants to do more than the world ever imagined possible. And one of the things that I am excited about with this generation of students is the fact that they only take the real deal. They won't settle for the fake stuff. All they want is all that Jesus has to offer, and that's really exciting to be part of. You know, I was watching on the screens, and I was thinking, man, those screens, how great would that to be having, like, your backyard, you know? Who needs a man cave? You need a whole garage for a TV like that if it would look that clear. You know, you have to be kind of careful. I was thinking before I came out, you know, I better make sure my teeth, you know, nothing in my teeth because it's magnified up there, you know? A couple of months ago in service, I got a divine revelation from the Lord. The Lord just deposited a deep truth into my life. I was finishing up stewardship on a Sunday morning, and I turned to walk off the screen, and as I did, I saw a guy up on the screen, and I looked, and I thought, who's the balding guy? That's not okay. I am 29 years old. This is too soon for me. And I walked off stage and y'all kept worshiping and I was crying before the Lord. Lord, help me. You know, my grandfather set me up for that one. He passed that on down to me. I didn't have any hopes at all. Both my grandfathers are bald. Doesn't matter how good the screen is, it's going to happen whether I want it to or not. Some things get passed on. That's not the only thing I had passed on in my life that I didn't want. Despite the fact that, you know, I'm a pretty muscular guy, I'm pretty fit. Don't look at me like that. Despite the fact, what you need to know is that I don't have an athletic bone in my entire body. And believe you me, I've tried it all. I've tried basketball in the third grade, quit, soccer, quit, baseball, quit. I even tried Foursquare, like, come on. None of it worked. So I thought I'd give it one last-ditch effort in the eighth grade. I went out for track. It was the first year and the last year that everybody could go out for track, and nobody got cut. It didn't matter how slow you were. And I'll never forget, it didn't matter how short the shorts got, I never got any faster. And it didn't matter how tall the tube socks got, I still didn't get any faster. I didn't have an athletic bone in my body. And I'll never forget as a 14-year-old thinking, I feel bad for my parents. My parents were the parents sitting up in the bleachers. Everyone asked, which one's yours? Oh, the guy that's in last place. Was he in last place last time too? Yep, that was him. And I'll never forget having that thought in my mind. You know, there are some things we pass on that other people don't really want. But when I think about it, at the heart of it, there are things that my parents passed on to me that were far more value than a couple of hairs on my head or an athletic bone in my body. I'll never forget my father, his heart to serve people. I'll never forget going with him on Saturdays and serving in our community. He passed it on. I'll never forget his work ethic. He taught me how to run with the best of them. My mother, she was a quiet woman, but she has a heart of humility that I couldn't find anywhere else I looked in life. She had a spirit of generosity about her that has continually encouraged me to do the same. I'll never forget the days that I didn't want to go to church. They said, you're going anyway. I'll never forget the things that I didn't know that they passed on to me in my life. Tonight I want to talk about what are you passing on? I feel a burden on my heart that we have a job to do, that God is not done with us, that there is something that is uniquely crafting us to do within the lives of the people around us, and if we're not careful, we will miss it. So my challenge and my question to you tonight is this: what are you passing on? What in your life is worth passing on? It doesn't matter if you're a parent in the room tonight, a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, a friend, a coworker, a neighbor. If you have a pulse, here's what I genuinely believe. I genuinely believe that God has placed something inside of you. The Bible calls it these vessels and jars of clay. He's placed something inside of you that the world around you needs to see. There is something inside of you that God has wired to look like him that only you can offer and that only you can give. And if we're not careful, we'll miss our opportunity to show the world a picture of God that only we can paint. So as I think about that, I'm reminded of Psalm 145, verse 4. It says this, "One generation shall commend your works to another and shall declare your mighty acts." We have a job to do. Psalm 78, verse 4 through 7, it says, "We will not hide them from our children, but tell to the coming generation the glorious deeds of the Lord and his might and the wonders that he has done. He has established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers to teach to their children, that the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn, and arise and tell them to their children, so that they too should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God." Ronald Reagan said this. He said, "Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction." Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. The reality is this in the world that we live in. The church, save for the grace of God, is but one generation away from extinction. The wonder and the awe of God lived out in our daily lives is but one generation away from extinction. The reality is this. I work with teenagers on a day-to-day basis, and here's what I've discovered. That we have a generation that is facing a battle in front of them. The odds are stacked against them. And if we are not careful to give what God has given us to give, we face a harsh reality that the darkness only grows darker. But what I'm reminded of is this, when I look and I see, I find teenagers that I work with who feel more accepted and more loved by the pictures they post online and get likes for than some of them even do in their very own homes. I work with teenagers and students, and I see them being influenced by the norms of our world because that sometimes the voices of evil are willing to be more frequent in their lives than the voices of right and wrong and truth in our world. We have something ahead of us, but I'm reminded that this, that even though we are just one generation away from extinction, even though there is the possibility that the things in our life don't go the way we have planned, there is always light at the end of the tunnel. That even when things get dark in our generation, even when the world seems like it's falling apart, we must be reminded that there is a hope that has been lasting for generation after generation, and that is the fact that the light only gets brighter. That the battle has already been won. You see, the students and the generation below you are not facing anything that is too tough for God. There's not a battle that the Lord is not aware of. There's nothing new under the sun. God has it all wrapped up inside of him, and he has a plan and a purpose, and the light will only prevail. But if you're anything like me, sometimes it gets easy to become discouraged. It gets easy to look at the people in our lives and think, it's too hard, we're too far gone, this is never going to happen, the promise is too far off. But when we spend our time thinking like that, we forget what 2 Corinthians 4 says, when it says, even when we are hard-pressed on every side, we will not be crushed. It says that even when we are perplexed, we will not be in despair. Even when we're persecuted, the Lord won't abandon us in our mess. Even when we're struck down, we will not be destroyed. Here's the deal. Jesus has the final word in your life. And whether you feel like you have something to give or not, and whether you feel like you have your life put together or not, I believe that he wants to use you because he has set you apart to not be crushed, to not be left in despair, to not be abandoned, and to not be destroyed. When I think about this, I think sometimes we need to show the people in our lives, our friends, our coworkers, our neighbors, our family members, we need to show them that they're worth fighting for. We need to show them that there is light on the other side of the tunnel that they are standing on. We have to spend less time pointing our fingers from a distance saying, you're doing it wrong, and more time reaching out to the students and the young people in our lives saying, let me show you the way. When I watch the video of students, I see our students walking and I think about the potential that they have wrapped up inside of them. I think about the life that they have yet to live, and I think about the plans that God can fulfill in their lives. And I look at them and I think, but if no one reaches out their hand, if no one shares that there is more than where they're at, that God has big plans for their life, what will happen? When we think about this in our lives, we have to remember what God can do. My house backs up to a junior high. And there's a track back there. I have terrible memories. So I sit instead of run. I sit and I watch other people run. And one afternoon I was sitting on my back porch while the junior high kids were running around the track. Their coach was up in the risers, the bleachers, texting on her phone. And so they would start out running, but you better believe the farther they got from the coach, the more they started walking. Every time they got close to the coach again, they'd pick up their pace and pretend like they had been running all along. And inevitably, the coach yelled out the infamous line, "What part of run do you not understand?" I sat there in my chair, not running, thinking, this isn't an issue of comprehension. What you really meant to say was, why, despite the fact that I told you to run, are you not doing what I asked? Are you familiar with this question, parents? See, the issue is not an issue of comprehension. It was an issue of proximity. The greater the distance the students placed between them and their coach, the more they struggled along the path. I firmly believe that if the coach would have set her phone down, got off the bleachers, and started running herself alongside of them, I believed that she would have seen the results she was hoping for. We live in a world, and you have a generation under you that is not struggling with comprehension. Believe you me, they are smarter than me. We live in a world where the people younger than us have access at the tip of their fingers, far greater than any generation before them has ever had. It's not an issue of comprehension. It's an issue of proximity. My wife can purchase $100 on Amazon faster than I can blink with a click of her thumb. And the next day, it's on my front porch. And she comes to me and she says, as we drive in the driveway, "Look, there's presents." It's not a present if I paid for it. We live in a world of information and access. The issue is not comprehension. The issue is proximity. Your child has the ability to call your bluff at the tip of their fingers faster than you even finish your sentence. When I think about this for our students, and I think about this for the people in your lives that the Lord is calling you to impress good things upon, I'm reminded that we're facing the threat of extinction, not because of a lack of information, but because of a lack of proximity. The next generation is waiting on you and me. The 14-year-olds in the room next door, the children in the room upstairs are waiting on you and me. Matthew chapter 5, I'm reminded of this. I'm reminded how good God is when he realized we didn't have a comprehension issue. God, instead of pointing his finger saying, "Why aren't you getting it right?" instead of sending someone else, he sent himself. John chapter 1, it tells us this. It says, Jesus, Emmanuel, God, literally God with us. In other words, God saw us in our mess. God saw us in our struggles. God saw us in the situations and circumstances that we found ourselves in. And instead of sending someone else to do the job, he sent himself. He sent Jesus to be with us. Why? Because he realized all along, this isn't an issue of the mind. This isn't an issue of comprehension. This is an issue of proximity. We were made to be with one another, to be together. Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says one of my favorite passages. He says, "You are the light of the world, a city set on a hill. You don't light a lamp and you don't put it under a basket." He says, "You take that lamp and you put it up on a stand so that everyone in the house has the ability to see it." And here's what he says. He says, in the same way that a lamp goes on a stand, he says, "Let your light shine before others." He says, wake up in the morning, and when you do, think about the people that you're going to encounter. Think about your coworker, your child, your parents, your family members. Think about your neighbor and hold your light up that it may give light to everyone in the house. And what he says is this, that as you do, they will see your good works. They will look at your life and they will say, man, there's something different about you. Man, there's a favor on your life. Man, there's a blessing that I haven't seen anywhere else. And they will look at you, no matter what you think of yourself, they'll look at you and they'll say, I gotta get what they got. I gotta have a piece of whatever it is that they have. And they'll look at you, and he says in Matthew chapter 5, and they'll give glory, not to you, but to your Father who is in heaven. The world is waiting on us to be the light. The dark is the dark, but here's the deal. The light is brighter still. We got a generation that needs to know the difference in right and wrong. The moral compass. The choices and the decisions that a 13-year-old make today have consequences on a worldwide scale far greater than anything I even faced, and I'm not old. So I'm reminded that the light has to shine. I read an article of a 59-year-old woman. She was married to a 74-year-old man. She went into the doctor. She was not feeling well. Her stomach was churning. She was having a hard time sleeping. And no matter how many different things she tried, she always felt sick when she got up every day. She went to the doctor, and the doctor said, "You're pregnant." She started laughing. He said, "No, I'm serious. You're pregnant." And she goes, "No, I'm 59. He's 74. Like, no. He said, "You're pregnant." She started crying. And then she said what a lot of you would probably say, "I can't believe you did this to me." In the Bible, there was a man. His name was Abraham, and his wife, Sarah. They were 100 years old. God shows up on the scene, and he says, "Here's the deal. I got big plans for your life. I have a future far greater than anything you ever dreamed. Something far greater." He said, "Your descendants will be as numerous as the stars." The light that you're going to spread throughout the world is far beyond what you imagined. He said, "The way you're going to do this is you're going to have a son." Sarah, I think she was 99 years old. He was 100. Oh, well, what's a year, right? Sarah started laughing. And God said, "No, actually, I'm serious. You're pregnant with a boy named Isaac." And we pick up the story in Genesis chapter 2, verse 1 through 4. They had a son named Isaac. And after all the trouble that they went through to get the promise fulfilled in their life, after all the struggle and the tension and the pain and the uncertainty and the unanswered questions about how this was going to work, God showed up and said, "You're going to sacrifice your one and only son." Genesis chapter 2, verse 1, 2 through 4 says this, "Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you." So Abraham rose early in the morning. He saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told them. After the struggle, after the pain, after the lack of understanding and beginning to see a better picture, God says, "Take your one and only beloved son, the one who fulfills the promise that I gave to your life. I want you to take him and I want you to sacrifice him on the mountain." As a parent, I don't know what that would be like, but some of you do. The thought of offering up the thing that you love the most. And I want to talk about this idea tonight of how do you pass on what matters? And I think from Abraham we learn something really important. What it means to pass on the things that matter most in life. Number one, you start by doing what you know to do. You may think, "I've only been at this a little while. I haven't even read my whole Bible. I don't know how to share with my friends. I don't know how to tell people about Jesus. Isn't that the pastor's job? I don't know how to raise a kid. This all just happened so quick. I didn't even get to my part of the dream and plans. I'm not sure how this is going to work." And God looks at Abraham, and Abraham does something that is wise. He starts with what God tells him to do. You can imagine the questions a father would have. "I'm taking my son up a mountain to sacrifice him. I'm not taking the lamb or the ram up to the sacrifice. God, what's going to happen? God, I'm not so sure about this. What if I step out and this gets crazier than I thought? What if people look at me in my life and think, what is he doing? What if it all falls apart? The thoughts that went through Abraham's mind in this moment, and yet he chose something. He chose obedience in that moment. God, I don't understand, but I'll do what you've told me to do. God, I don't know much, but I'll use what I have. Too often we spend our time waiting on what we don't have while God is waiting up for us to use what we do. There's a passage, another passage of scripture in Acts chapter 4. Peter, he walks up on this man, an invalid. He walks up and he needs healing. And the beggar, he begs for money. And Peter looks at him and Peter says to the man, he says, I don't have money. I don't have gold or silver. I don't have anything to give you. And he says a line that I love and is deep in my heart. It says this. He says, but what I do have, I give to you. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, rise up and walk. And Peter reaches down and pulls this man who had been laying on his mat up, and he begins to walk. You see, the man was looking for money and he got healing. You see, Peter was asked for money. He didn't have money, but he gave what he had because that's all that he knew to do. Your children need the same. Our students need the same. The people at your work, they need the same. They are waiting for us to just give what we have, even when we don't have all the answers. You start with what you do know, and then you trust God for what you don't. Start with what you know, and then trust God with what you don't. Genesis chapter 22, we pick up the story with Abraham. Here's what he says. And Isaac said to his father Abraham, he said, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. And he said, behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? Isaac's starting to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Dad, are we going to stop for Dunkin' Donuts on the way? No. Dad, where is the lamb that we're going to sacrifice? Who or what are we about to sacrifice? And here's what Abraham said. Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they went, both of them together. When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar, on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son, but the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And Abraham said, here I am. And he said, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, the Lord will provide. And as it is said to this day, on the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided. In our world today, we look at that story and we think this is a little crazy. The Bible's a little weird. This is a little outside of my comfort zone. But it doesn't mean that the principle doesn't apply. You see, Abraham walked into the moment of uncertainty with this resounding trust that no matter what happens, God will provide. That even when it doesn't all add up, God will have my back. That even though it feels like the promises of God are slipping through my fingers, God isn't finished with me yet. And Abraham steps out in that moment in faith, trusting God to do what only God could do. We live in a world, and I think about Isaac in that moment. We often read this story and we think about Abraham. What must it be like to sacrifice your son, to be willing to go onto a mountain without a ram, knowing that this may not end very well? But what about Isaac? Isaac is the one laying on the wood. Isaac is the one with his hands bound and his father drawing a knife above him. Isaac has seen this plot line before. He knows what's about to happen. To think in the thoughts of Isaac, to be laying there and looking up at your father, and I think for one moment he was like a normal teenager. And he thought, Dad, you don't know nothing. You're crazy. But I think in the other moment, we capture something more powerful than that. We capture Isaac looking up at his dad, saying, wow, my dad will worship God no matter what it costs. We find Isaac in the moment with his father, close to his father, thinking, my dad took me with him. This may not be as fun as I thought it was going to be, but it doesn't matter because I'm standing by my dad. I think about the moments in my life that have brought the most impact and the most meaning. They've all been moments where my father has stood by my side. I'll never forget the day I was baptized. I came down, I walked down the aisle. I had never seen my dad cry, and he dropped to his knees and he looked me in the eyes and he said, son, I am so proud of you. And in that moment, I experienced proximity. I experienced closeness, connectedness with my father. And I think, what if we looked at the people in our lives the same way? What if we went to work every day knowing that someone that we encounter needs a touch from God in the same way? We don't know how to, we don't know what to say. I don't know how to share the gospel. I've never done this before. I'm so proud of you. Man, you're great at your job. And you start giving whatever it is that you have to give. And Isaac is laying on the altar. And I can only imagine the embrace that happened when God provided the ram in the thicket. Praise God. He was faithful. And Abraham goes over and he pulls his son immediately off the altar and he cuts the rope off his hands. And imagine with me for a moment the embrace of a father and a son. The power that was happening in their midst, the spirit, the joy, the celebration, because Isaac witnessed his father trust in God. Because Isaac saw a God who can do great things. Isaac saw a God who could do a miracle in their life. The reality is the same for you and me. Whether you have children or grandchildren or not, whether you have tons of friends or just a close few, the reality is this. We live in a world that needs to see the greatness and the wonder of God. We are one generation away from extinction in a lot of areas, and if we are not careful to give what he has given to us, we will be found not faithful stewards, and the wells will start to run dry. I'm so encouraged. I'm so encouraged that God always sees hope in every situation. And when we are faithful to start with what we know and trust God for the rest, whether you need something in your own life tonight, this week, or whether you're praying for your children or your grandchildren or your friends or your neighbors, God is not done with you yet. You are the light. I want to tell you a quick story right now. I'm going to invite a friend to come up. Everybody say hello, Trey. Welcome, Trey, up. Trey, are you 16 or 17?
I'm about to be 16.
About to be 16. Trey's about to turn 16. I want to tell you a story about Trey. About 6 months ago, I got an email from Trey's dad. In this email, he was concerned. Maybe as a parent, you've felt a feeling of concern for your children or wonder of how things are going to go and how things are shaping up. And he said, I'm afraid that the path is getting blurry. And he said this. I don't know if I told you that he sent me an email, but he did. Your dad and I talk. We're cool. All right. He sent me an email and he said this. He said, I have a little girl. And here's my greatest concern. My greatest concern is that the spark in her eyes is dwindling. My greatest concern as a parent, my greatest concern as a student pastor is that the world tries to take hold of our young people in a strong way. And what begins to happen is that the spark and the gift and the life that God has placed within them begins to fade. He sent me this email. And I wrote back, don't stop praying. Here's what I want to tell you tonight, parents. Don't stop praying for your kids. Don't stop believing in your kids. don't stop bringing them to church. That's what Trey's parents did. Every time the doors opened in the last 4 or 5 months, Trey has been in this building. She slept in this building at student takeover or pretended to sleep. We have a class of young girls. Trey has been coming every week. Trey has been reading her Bible. There have been things that are going on in her life that may have felt out of control, but she said, you know what? I'm not giving up. I'm not quitting yet. She's been reading her Bible. She's been praying in the Spirit. She's surrounding herself and placing herself